Please lower your head and watch your step while boarding.
Welcome to the Attractions Podcast. You are all clear for dispatch. Have fun.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 82 of the Attractions Podcast. I'm Brittany.
And I'm Seth.
And we're here to talk to you about the latest and greatest in theme park news and more, as well as what's going on in our own lives. Seth, how have you been this week?
I've been great. Thanks for asking. We have finally gotten the rain we have been waiting for here in Central Florida. We have not had serious rain in it feels like months. And we got it all in a few hours today. So if you were in an Orlando theme park today, I'm sorry. you got drenched. But I did earlier this week get to go back to Epcot and do a little bit more of flower and garden food and wining around the world.
Yum.
Which is always fun. But the most important part of my week was my wife finally got her second vaccine shot.
Yay!
She had a rough 24 hours or so. Awful. Just kind of feeling a little icky.
Yeah.
But definitely feeling a ton better now, and I'm excited to get mine in just over a week and a half. So
that's so exciting. And then 2 weeks, and then you'll be basically invincible with superpowers and stuff.
I will be licking doorknobs left and right. So how was your week?
My week was pretty good. As I mentioned last week, Josh was out of town, so I had the house to myself. I watched so much in my Netflix queue, you have no idea. And I did so much laundry, and it was great.
But it sounds like heaven.
It was really nice, I'm not gonna lie. Sometimes you need that solitude, that peace.
Mm-hmm.
But then he ended up coming back a day early.
Oh,
they're together now.
Kermie's got a friend.
Kermie has a friend. Awesome. For those of you listening to the audio version and not watching the video version, my Kermit Nuemo now has a piggy companion, and they are dressed in the new Electric Festival outfits that just dropped on the 1st, because I have a fever, and the only prescription is more Nuemos.
I'm sure that those are going to be really valuable someday, like Beanie Babies. You're going to be able to retire on those.
I love them. I'm in deep now. There's no going back. I'm going to carry them with me everywhere, and everyone's going to hate it.
I can't wait for you to bring them to a park so they can see Muppet Vision.
Listen, there are shops on Etsy that make tiny magnet maps and annual passes and food for them to hold so you can take pictures with them.
They will no longer need a magic band, though. They just need their iPhones.
They have little iPhones, too.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. Well, that's been my week, is just fawning over these plush toys like a child.
I've been doing pretty much the same, except to my cats.
Of course.
They don't like it much.
Oh, how are the kitties? Are they good?
They are slowly, we have introduced them to the porch for the first time. This is their first time seeing actual outdoors, and they had to sniff everything. Lots of sniffing going on.
As they do.
But they're sweet. They're wonderful.
Oh. Well, without any further ado, we have a lot to talk about. Let's get into the news.
Let's do it.
This week's dance was kind of low key. I like it. I feel like we just talked about this getting extended, and it's been extended again. Universal Orlando is making Mardi Gras keep on rolling through May the 2nd.
Hey, you know what? If Flower and Garden can go until July and then Food and Wine can pick up right after at Epcot, I say we just make Mardi Gras go until, I don't know, Christmas. That's theologically really makes no sense, but we'll do it anyway.
Don't let Halloween Horror Nights hear you say that.
I was excited. I bought another tasting lanyard. I had used my old one up just before before the extension was announced, and I was like, all right, I guess I got to almost a month to eat my way through another 15 samples. I can do that. I can definitely do that.
Have you eaten your way to a point where you have a favorite? thing?
You know, I keep coming back to the seafood boil. The crawfish and the shrimp, and plus you get sausage and potatoes and corn. It's like, I don't know, $11 if you just pay cash for it, or it comes out to $4.33 if you use the tasting lanyard as an annual pass holder. Ooh. So, like, I can have one of those, and that can be my lunch. I can make that work. That's probably the best value right now inside the parks. And if you like seafood, it's really tasty.
Oh, it sounds so good. Well, definitely check it out. You have plenty of time if you haven't yet.
Yep.
Over at Tokyo Disney Resort, they announced the name of their new value hotel themed to Toy Story. And the name...
Drum roll, please.
The Tokyo Disney Resort Toy Story Hotel.
They invested a lot. They had focus groups. They paid someone a lot of money to come up with that extraordinarily creative. You know, maybe in Japanese, it's got a different flair. I don't know. It is what it is. It says what it is. You know, if I was going to Tokyo, which I'm not able to because they're not allowing Americans in right now, but if I was, I would seriously consider this, not so much for the giant Toy Story theming, but just for the fact that it's their first moderate hotel. Previously, you had the deluxes, which are kind of out of my budget, and the value, which if I'm going all the way over there for a trip, I maybe want something a little bit nicer than that. So,
yeah.
So this is a great kind of middle-of-the-road choice. You know, you got your dining, you got your retail. More importantly, you've got really easy access to their train system or their monorail system in order to get to the parks.
Yeah. I kind of like that it looks like those, what you call them, connects or...
Yeah.
They make me think of math class because we use these little blocks to count when I was in elementary school.
Yeah, exactly. I hope the Lego hotel people have not taken a look. Because it might be slightly inspired, but we won't mention that.
I'm really excited. The hotel will have 595 guest rooms and 11 floors with every single square inch themed to Toy Story. I wonder if we'll see some clones of Toy Story Land theming, at least with Jesse with the Christmas lights. Looks very reminiscent.
Yeah, I mean, that looks extremely reminiscent of the giant statue. It's Slinky Dog.
And so, the Buzz, too. Same stance.
You know, it's at a certain point, I think if Disney has their way, there will be a Toy Story Land something in every single Disney property. Like, if there, we used to have a Disney store in your mall. Nope, we're just putting a Toy Story Land there now. A couple flat rides. It'll fit in fine next to the TCBY. It'll be great.
Perfect. Over at Shanghai Disneyland, to celebrate their 5th anniversary, they have a new nighttime spectacular, and spoilers, it's amazing.
Yeah, I just reading the descriptions, seeing the pictures, I'm drooling over this one.
Have you seen the video that's been going around?
I have not watched it, and obviously I need to go and watch that.
It's the Marvel portion alone, because this is the first nighttime spectacular to have Marvel superheroes in it. Is crazy! Absolutely crazy, like Hawkeye shoots an arrow and it does the firework thing that Mulan does in Happily Ever After. Iron Man shoots off his ion beams and it has a corresponding effect. Oh, it's so cool.
Wow. I think the other impressive thing about this is that while it does seem to use a lot of projection effects on the castle, they've extended the LED lighting with, I think, 27,000 new LED lights all throughout the giant fantasy garden, which is kind of their hub, and it also includes a couple attractions like Dumbo and the carousel. So to spread out the area that where guests can enjoy it, but also immerse them with these 27,000 LED lights synchronized with the show. So you should be able to really enjoy it no matter where you are standing.
Yeah, could you imagine them doing that at Walt Disney World with this space?
Well, you know, there's been talk. There was a, I think it was called Project Nugget, which was supposed to be some sort of Magic Kingdom nighttime spectacle. There's been word of things being tested late at night. Who knows? It would be great for the 50th anniversary to have something like that at the Magic Kingdom, but it hasn't been officially announced yet, unlike Harmonious.
which we're still waiting on.
Right, exactly. And no matter what we get, obviously we won't get any Marvel characters in Walt Disney World. But, you know, maybe someday we could get a new fireworks show at Disneyland that could have, or in California Adventure, some nighttime upgrade to World of Color with, with some Marvel characters.
Man, I've only ever seen the holiday World of Color, but it was incredible.
The second version of the holiday World of Color was actually my favorite seasonal one, a little ahead of the Halloween one they did. But you should see the original, the real World of Color. That's
I think
at least once.
I've watched it on YouTube more times than I would care to admit, but one of these days.
Just not the same if you're not getting sprayed in the face.
I know, and specifically the one with the synchronized ear hats. That was the video I always gravitated to.
Yeah, that was something that happened like once for the media and once where they had a thing where if you had ear hats, you got like instant fast passes or whatever, and you could go up close. So they got maybe twice where you had that sea of ear hats, and it really didn't happen much after that.
Whatever. Over at Six Flags Great Adventure, they have introduced a new Coaster Power Hours experience happening on Friday evenings from 6 to 11, starting this week, April 16th.
You know, this almost makes me want to look and see if I can get a flight back home to New Jersey because, you know, this was the closest theme park or really, honestly, it's an amusement park. It's not a theme park to where I grew up. Excuse me. We'll edit that out.
Gesundheit.
And the opportunity to get to ride a dozen of the park's best coasters, including Kingda Ka, Nitro, El Toro, in the dark, with hopefully minimal lines, and at a really reasonable price. This is a hard ticket event that starts at $30. And if you're an annual pass holder, you can get a discount even on that. I think you could probably squeeze a lot of riding as long as they, you know, run the full number of trains, as long as they have these staffed up. That could be a really great experience.
Yeah, for $30, you get to ride 12 coasters for 5 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great deal.
You know, I hate to say it because this is the park that, you know, I kind of grew up near. But I haven't even been on a lot of these because, you know, they add stuff all the time. But I'm just glad to see the Batman the Ride, which was my first B&M invert that I ever rode. Still on there, still going strong from the 90s.
Whoa. Yep. I've never been to a Six Flags park, and I have two in my state.
All right, road trip.
I need to fix that. I'm fully vaccinated now. I can do that. speaking of things relating to personal safety and such, Walt Disney World has relaxed the face covering rules for outdoor photos.
Yeah, I think this is a little maybe controversial. Some people were talking about this on social media. As of April the 8th, which is now about half a week ago, guests are allowed to briefly remove their masks while taking a photo outdoors. This is not indoors. This is not while on a ride, any ride photos, even if it's an outdoor ride. But if you're, you know, taking a quick selfie in front of Space Mountain, you can pull your mask down, take the picture, put the mask back on. You know, interestingly, they got, you know, a bit of backlash, people saying, is it too early? Universal's been doing that pretty much all along.
Yep.
all along, the rule at Universal has been you could take your mask off take the picture, put it back on, and no one really seemed to notice. But when people did the same thing at Disney, it got attention. So I think the funniest thing, well, maybe not funniest, the most ironic thing about this situation is that I was at Epcot just a couple days before this went into effect. And I swear I noticed for the first time that they had posted wear a photo, you know, wear a mask while taking a photo stickers on the ground at certain photo ops for the Flower and Garden Festival. And I could swear those had not been there when I had walked around maybe a week or 10 days earlier. So there was probably some stickers that got printed up and someone was paid to put them down just for them to get paid to go out a couple days later and pick them all back up again.
If anyone has the budget to do that, yeah, it's Disney. Yeah,
they can afford it.
Over at Epcot, a new merchandise location taking place of the long closed Mouse Gear has been announced, called Creations Shop. And while I was writing this up when it was announced, I kept typing Creature Shop because that's where my head is at.
I would love a Creature Shop. That would be more exciting. Right? This is, I think, another step in the Disney Springs world of Disneyification of Disney retail, because it's, you know, Mouse Gear, it was kind of 80s, 90s. It had a lot of clunky stuff hanging from the ceiling, but you knew you were in a theme park gift store. Whereas this, we see, you know, a big, beautiful bank of floor-to-ceiling windows, letting us see some greenery outside. We see some stylish, looks like wooden ceiling beams. You know, open concept, lots of light, very clean, very contemporary. Looks like it could be an upscale mall. The most Disney thing that we can see from the concept art is a big, bold mural of abstract Mickey Mouse artwork. So I'm sure you're going to also find other little hidden Mickeys all over the place. But it's definitely, you know, it's going with the contemporary, trendy, clean aesthetic as opposed to something that is more quirky and theme park like.
Yeah, this looks pretty much like exactly not only like what they did for World of Disney at both Downtown Disney and Disney Springs, but also the Disney Store redo. Mm-hmm.
Yep, exactly.
And the store in a store displays at select Targets.
Targets,
because
yes.
I've been to the one that's here, and it looks very reminiscent of this. I wish that they could have done this, but there was a Photoshop work going around where someone had just put touches of Epcot in there. Mm-hmm. So you could keep the clean sort of department store-esque aesthetic that Disney seems to be going for, but it feels more Epcot instead of just Mickey Mouse.
Well, I mean, to compare it to the competitor up the street, Universal built their new Universal Studios store, which we talked about, which is pretty much this exact same kind of aesthetic, like, you know, kind of light, neutral colors, woods, you know, but they also have a legacy store right next door that's got all of the like vintage and retro throwback and all the kitschy stuff and all the props. And I think there's a place for both of that. So, it would be great if there was somewhere at Epcot a retro Epcot store or a throwback. But we're burying the lead. We're, you know, who cares about the shopping? We are here for the Coke products. And Club Cool is being resurrected. I don't know if it will, how themed it will be, how it will be decorated. I'm sure it's not going to be as cool as the original ice station. What was the
with the caveman?
Yes, with the frozen caveman and the shooting fountains and everything. But whatever it is, as long as it has Beverly, we're all good. We have been deprived of Beverly for way too long.
So you say, I miss Vegetabeta. That one was my go-to. Oh,
that was great. I also really liked Mezzomix. There was a ginger ale. I forget what the name was, but that was also high on my list. I also miss the Japanese watermelon soda that they had.
Yeah, the melon. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of that one either. But this will be located adjacent to the Creations shop, not the Creature shop.
Yeah.
And it's, according to Disney, it will celebrate the beverage in a new way while keeping the iconic experience of exploring flavors from around the world with some new magic.
Now, they have not said exactly where this is going, but I've got to imagine if this is opening in this year.
Yeah.
This summer, it has to be in Future World East, in what used to be Mouse Gear, because the entire other half of Future World, the other Communicore, is leveled. You know, they've dismantled that whole section where the old club, Club Cool, used to be.
Yeah.
Mouse Gear, they, and also where Electric Umbrella,
yeah,
have been hollowed out. The old Interventions on that side has been turned into a temporary Mouse Gear. The portion of Interventions that was closest to Universe of Energy. So that right now is a temporary Mouse Gear. And it looks like they kept up all the structural framing for the old Mouse Gear and Electric Umbrella. So I would assume that you know, maybe Electric Umbrella becomes part of Club Cool, or vice versa. But that's the area where all of this obviously has got to go. Because if you look on the other half, all of that is just dirt right now, and nothing's open there this summer. That is where, I guess, the Moana water walkthrough will eventually end up.
Yeah. I was really surprised with this summer. I was not expecting that.
Yep. So, good. New stuff to look forward to.
Yes.
Of course, we know Universal's definition of summer is the very beginning of June. Disney's definition of summer could be like September. I don't know.
We'll when see. Is the calendar day for
exactly.
the last
When's
day
the
of summer?
Exactly.
Over in California, SeaWorld San Diego will reopen with rides on April 12th, which is all tomorrow, right, if you're watching the live show, or today if you're listening to the audio.
Yeah, so they have been operating as a zoo. It's kind of interesting. They had an advantage over Disneyland and Universal Hollywood is that they had, you know, a zoological accreditation, so they could open their shows and some walkthroughs as long as they weren't running any rides. But now they will be able to have their rides and charge full price. I know from some things I've seen on social media that they really got slammed with people when they first opened as a zoo. They're using date-specific tickets, and I believe that they have to have reservations the same way you do at SeaWorld in Orlando. But be prepared for that one to be busy.
Mm-hmm. And just like with all the other California parks reopening right now, only California residents are allowed to visit. And at least with SeaWorld, I haven't seen this stated so specifically, but they said that guests may be asked to present proof of residency upon entry.
Interesting. You know, there's a lot of questions. I know that when you purchase tickets, they're requesting addresses and zip codes. I guess it is up to the individual parks on how they exactly want to enforce that at the time you enter. Don't try to get around this. Just wait, because indications are that by mid-June, some of these restrictions are probably going to be lifted. Hold on. Let the people in California have not had a theme park in a long time. Let them have their fun for a little while, and then we can go. The rest of us can go.
Yes. Be fair to California.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay. So
here we go.
The time has come. Jurassic World, the ride, as we knew it prior to this past week, was kind of in its beta mode. Yeah.
They had, you know, it's it was kind of embarrassing that they had a grand opening for a ride that was clearly not 100%. And they kind of danced around at first, you know, and then they owned up to the fact that, yeah, this finale is not what we intended. Not all these effects are final. And thank goodness that they used some downtime to really plus this ride. Because I don't think, you know, even if you are a hardcore fan of Jurassic Park, the ride, you got to admit now that Jurassic World, the ride, is an upgrade. This is definitely an improvement over what we had before. And really, we can talk about all the new improvements. The big headliner is the Indominus Rex. There's been a couple I-Rex animatronics added to the ride. One is about halfway through and is just a head. And it's a neat little appearance just before the lift hill. The big one is the finale. This guy is one of the most impressive moving animatronics I've ever seen. He really makes the Carnotaurus in Countdown to Extinction look, I'm sorry, dinosaur. It will always be CTX to me. It really makes the Carnotaurus look wimpy and small and slow.
Well, see, that scares me because that scares me. If you go and watch old ENL episodes, mm-hmm. I close my eyes anytime Vincent would make me go on dinosaur.
Aww.
So.
So, yeah, before, the finale of this ride has always been a big T-Rex popping out of the waterfall in front of you just before you go down the hill. And that's the finale we still have in Orlando at Islands of Adventure. But what this did was add a new Indominus Rex that appears off to the left first and kind of menaces the boat. So the T-Rex has gone from the villain to now he saves the day by distracting the I-Rex so that you can escape. When the ride first opened, the I-Rex was basically like a head on a stick. It kind of poked out from some foliage and opened its mouth a little. It wasn't scary. It wasn't menacing. And it was kind of like, it was a shrug. Now this thing moves. It is huge. It is intimidating. It is right over the heads of, you know, it seems like it's right over the boat.
It gets close.
And it makes a huge impact. So big applause, big bravo. But what we really need to talk about is Predator Cove. Because Predator Cove was to me the biggest misfire in any refurb that I can think of, that they took, this was originally the section with the compies, and it had the two compies fighting over an employee shirt. Was it an employee shirt or was it a popcorn box originally?
I thought it was a shirt.
Yeah. We'll have the popcorn box at? Darn, I'm going to have to watch an old video again. But anyway, what they did is they put in a pile of random, coolers and crates and medical boxes that didn't really make a lot of sense, and some dead, chopped-up pteranodons, and it was grotesque and disturbing, but also really amateurish. Because there was, fake blood all over the place, and it looked like someone's bad Halloween walkthrough. It was just kind of embarrassing, and yeah. It didn't really serve a lot of point to the story. It was distracting, and it was, I don't know how that got out of concept phase. The only thing I can think of is that was never the plan, but for some, you know, budgetary or time reason, they're like, we have these leftover props from Halloween. Just throw these there and we'll hope no one notices. That's the only thing I can think of. Now we've got a gyrosphere, which I understand is an actual screen used prop that's been installed there. That's what I heard. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's in any of the official. I'm going to have to ask my press contact about it next time I go. But if it isn't a screen used prop, then it is definitely a really good reproduction. And more important, the compies are back. They're fighting over a hat now. But that's always been one of my favorite little gags. And it's so effective. It works so well. They do have one of those in Orlando. And it's except this one, their skins look so much better.
Right.
Everything looks so good on this ride, and I want to get out there and ride it before the elements in the water make everything look old again.
Right. Yeah, I remember when it first opened and I saw the Predator Cove sequence, I was like, there's so much blood. It was so violent. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, and it was just...
It pulls you out of it because it's so unexpected. Yeah. Yeah.
We got a couple comments I want to address in the... it just scrolled past me. But the Jeep, people are saying that they really missed the Jeep in the original version. And I totally agree. The Jeep, when it worked, was the best effect. Even better than the dropping crate in the Orlando version, which hasn't been working a lot lately either. But this IREX head is fantastic. And as long as they can keep it working, any working effect is better than an effect that only worked once every 100 times you went to see it. So,
yeah.
Well, so I'm giving big thumbs up for, you know, I think if this had opened like in this condition when it was supposed to, you know, it would have gotten a lot more positive attention instead of, you know, it sort of getting kind of a meh when it did open.
Yeah. Planning a trip as soon as we're able. So I need to ride it. The video looks so great. Also at Universal Studios Hollywood, The Secret Life of Pets Off the Leash is now in technical rehearsal.
So I got to admit, I was wrong about this one. I had seen the blueprints and the animatic renderings of the original trackless concept of this, which was a much more ambitious dark ride. You know, when I heard that it had been budget cut and no longer trackless, and, you know, I figured, oh, well, they'll probably just, you know, add a bunch of screens. It'll be meh. No, this is truly one of the best family dark rides that I think has been built in the last 10 years. I mean, the sheer number of animatronics. We've got, what, 64?
64, yeah.
And not just kind of the minimal animatronics that we've been seeing in a lot of rides that just have one or two functions. I mean, some of these are really, really good, really detailed. And just the queue alone.
The queue alone
has animatronics that are better than most full attractions. I mean,
the
I think
dog right there.
I think there are more. Oh my God, he had so much personality. They really captured that weenie dog getting a massage from the mixer.
Yeah,
was my favorite moment of the trailer of that first movie. It was probably my favorite moment in the whole first movie, and they just capture that perfectly, and it's just a throwaway thing in the queue that you wander past. We could talk for a while about the queue, how this, I wish that they had built Harry Potter when this model of queue was, you know, possible, or when they were willing to try it, because the one thing that kills me about Hogwarts Castle and Gringotts Bank is that there, you know, in reality, there would not be, you know, handrails. There would not be all these dividers.
Yeah.
And this is a queue where it's just kind of natural furniture that's been placed in ways so that, you know, the queuing itself becomes totally invisible. And it's really clever, and it's the kind of thing that most people will not really ever really notice or focus on. It's almost like, you know, the whole queue is a ride, except you're the ride vehicle.
Yeah.
More than feels like you're waiting in a line. I just hope that their virtual line system that can keep up with it. Hopefully, since this is an Omnimover that's got like a moving sidewalk to load people, that they should be able to really churn people through this. You know, this could be a real people eater, you know, on the scale of like a haunted mansion, if they're able to operate efficiently. And we haven't even really talked about the ride.
Yeah, the ride. the scale of this thing, granted, I've just watched the video of it. It's huge.
I didn't think the sets would have so much verticality and also so many layers. I'm going to talk about the haunted mansion again, because I love especially the graveyard scene in the Haunted Mansion, because you can ride through that 50 times and look in a different direction and see another little detail. And the, you know, just the first major scene that you drive through in this ride feels like that, with animatronics talking to you from, you know, above, below, different gags in the windows of the buildings, and just so much life, so much kinetic energy going on all around you. And you know, the animatronics are real animatronics with fur and moving physical features and not just projected faces.
Yeah.
When Disney started doing the projected face animatronics, I liked them at first for some characters, but it's gotten overused, and you know, it's not really appropriate, especially for anything that's furry. So these animatronics just look great, and you know, it does use projections in a few places, but it's so well integrated into the sets that you don't mind. It doesn't at all feel like a screen-based ride. It feels like an old-school practical ride with the projections just sort of, you know, extending the sets and filling in the details. God, I want to ride this in person so badly.
Yeah, this is a case of one of those IP where I'm just like, yeah, that's cute. Like, it's not really for me, but this ride is so well executed.
The ride is better than the movies. That, I will say that. I mean, yeah, this is totally this, and you don't have to know anything at all about the plot of the movies to enjoy it, because it's cute animals. And who does not love that? And plus, the, you know, there's this little moment at the end where they use projections to have you adopted, and the different families. And one, I love this for two reasons. One, because they were had a really diverse selection of different kinds of families that can adopt you. So like, you know, I think everyone, you know, no matter where you come from or what kind of family you have, you can see yourself reflected in the ride, which I think is really cool. But two, it reminds me of the old Mexico boat ride, because you sort of move from screen to screen and the family follows each car along, and then a new family comes on the screen behind. And it reminds me of that scene in the marketplace where the vendor would chase you from screen to screen, which was always my favorite part of the Mexico boat ride. So I love the fact that I can combine those two things.
That whole pet adoption sequence where it kind of you leave the plot with the film characters and you go through like a car wash yes. type of thing where they clean you and make you look all nice for adoption day, and you go to a pet store where they accessorize you and everything. It's so cool.
And it's a very dog-centric ride. I will say that is my only criticism, that there are far... I think it is a very pro-dog ride, which I disagree with, but there is an amazing sight gag involving a cat in, like, a cleaning machine in the grooming section towards the end that is just hilarious. If you've ever taken your cat to be groomed, you will laugh out loud when you see that.
And then you come to the end and they're throwing a party for you because you got adopted. And my favorite part is this little pug dressed as a minion.
Minion. Oh, and with his tongue hanging out and little goggles and the yellow and the blue overalls. I want to jump off the ride vehicle and hug everyone.
Well, they're soft.
Bravo. Big applause to everyone Universal Creative involved in this. The only question I have is, how soon can we tear down Shrek and build this in Orlando? Shrek can go, if you're not going to build Super Nintendo in Kid Zone, because Epic Universe is back on, I'm fine with you knocking down Kid Zone and building a whole, like, Secret Life of Pets area. That's cool. Pretty much wherever you want to put this, Toon Lagoon, plenty of open room there. Wherever you want to put it, please give us this ride. We need this ride.
Come on.
So badly, because this is something that everyone can enjoy. You don't have to be scared of it. You're not going to get sick on it. You don't have to wear 3D glasses on it. You might be allergic to it, but I think all the dogs are hypoallergenic, so it's okay.
Maybe for Orlando's version, if it ever happens, more cats for Seth.
More cats. I would appreciate more cats. Absolutely. But you know what? I don't even necessarily know, like, you know, yeah, the plans for the trackless version of this originally were really cool, but they did such a great job with it. I'd rather them just clone this and invest your money if you're going to do trackless in something else. Trackless has kind of been hit or miss for me, and I feel like they invest so much money in the ride system that they don't have any left over for the actual ride experience when they do a trackless. So I'm kind of happy they went with the Omnimover. It's tried and true, and it will hopefully not break down. Rise the Resistance is trackless. We're going to see when Ratatouille opens up how reliable trackless is.
I prefer Omnimover. I think Rise is great, but, and this might be really nitpicky, what it does to the floor I find so distracting. Like seeing the line,
they might as well be tracks.
Right, exactly. It just, if I look at the floor, I'm like, oh wow, that's scratched to pieces.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
If they ever designed a trackless ride that was truly trackless, in the sense that each car was really taking a random and different path every time, and then it wasn't just like 99% the same with one little variation, depending on whether you're on the left or the right, you know. Really come up with something that's truly trackless, and then we'll talk. Until then, let's stick with a track. Might as well.
Yeah. It's going to look like it's tracked anyway by the time you're done. Big news. This is
Universal's knocking it out on both.
They
both
really
coasts.
Are. They're killing it. This is the portion of the show where we had what would have been four main attractions. So big news incoming. Jurassic World Velocicoaster has an opening date.
June 10th, folks. Set your alarm bright and early. I'm going to be leaving my house that morning between 3 and 4 a.m. That's what I did for Hagrid, and I only had to wait about 7.5 hours once I got there for Hagrid.
God.
So I figure, if anything, this is going to have a lot more testing before its opening day than Hagrid will. They've been running multiple trains almost every day, so this will definitely have a workout. The crew will know what they're doing by the time June 10th arrives, which is the most important thing.
I can't wait to pick your brain about this, because as excited as I am for it, I'm scared. it's just the top hat and the Heartline roll over the water.
This is going to be an intense ride, you know.
Yeah.
Hagrid's was kind of designed as a family plus ride, like something tweens, teens could appreciate, but that like older riders are not going to get, you know, too twisted up by. This is designed for the people who really miss Dragon Challenge and are like, Hagrid's is too wimpy. I miss the real roller coaster. This is your real roller coaster. This is your inversions.
Yeah.
This is your airtime, lots and lots of airtime. This is your 70 mile an hours. Man, just that final Heartline roll over the water, that alone, I think a lot of coaster junkies are going to travel a long way just to experience this. I've gotten to stand on the bridge that's sort of in the middle of that big spaghetti bowl at the end of the ride, and watch as the cars go over and around and above me, and it's so smooth. I think what's amazing about this is that there are some twists and turns that are just connected one seamlessly into the other. A lot of roller coasters are like, you do a maneuver, then you go straight for a little bit and turn, and then you do another maneuver, and this is just one thing just transferring right into another, just without letting up. And I'm going to be a thrill geek. Absolutely.
Get out of here.
It is definitely designed for thrill geeks 100%. And I know that I'm going to be spending a lot of hours on VelociWatch, hanging out outside the entrance, just sort of lurking around just in case they happen to have a technical rehearsal.
VelociWatch.
So.
Hashtag.
People mentioning some foliage added to three broomsticks. As far as I can tell, it does not completely block the view at all. Like, I've been on the bridge, and I've looked over and seen the people at Three Broomsticks. It really just kind of, unless more has been added in the last few days since I saw it, there was some filming going on, and they did add some temporary foliage to block off Three Broomsticks while they were filming for a commercial. Since then, there's just some decorative foliage, but I think you're still going to be able to see the coaster from the back of Three Broomsticks. That's my hope right now.
Now we have a date, so just a matter of time. And an official ride POV, which you can check out on our YouTube channel if you would like.
Spoiler alert.
Okay, here's where we get to the stuff that may...
Are we still not up to the main event?
No!
My God.
Avengers Campus has an opening date, June 4th, because Kevin Feige's birthday is June 2nd or something?
All right, so do you think that's why they picked that day?
No, that's why they picked that day.
Really?
There was a special look inside the Disney Parks media live stream event last week. And
which only special people could watch.
Oh, special. And it had Josh D'Amaro, the chairman of Disney Parks Experiences and Products, having a chat with Kevin Feige in Avengers Campus. And to be honest, it felt a lot like the IAPA presentation, where it was just a lot of talking. Look at all this cool stuff we did and right. All these things that we're going to have. But then the last like 5 minutes, they started talking about the parks and stuff. And then Josh D'Amaro said something about your birthday's coming up, right, Kevin? He was like, yeah, it's like June 2nd or something. And he was like, well, I thought, what if we opened Avengers Campus on your birthday? But it's on a Wednesday. So I thought, let's open it on a Friday. So June 4th.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's legit. That's
all right.
That really happened.
Sure. yes, June 4th will be the debut of Avengers Campus, which includes one new ride, the Spider-Man ride that involves 3D glasses, is not at Universal Islands of Adventure. This is the Spider-Man ride that is going to be suspiciously similar to the Ninjago ride at Legoland, where you're going to fling your hands at a screen interact with web bots. It's called Web Slingers, a Spider-Man adventure. And I think the coolest thing about this attraction is the fact that they're going to launch a animatronic acrobat off of its roof every so often. It's a Spider-Man that's going to fly through the air and do cool tricks and hopefully land safely to be reset for the next one.
And then, unless they're not doing this anymore, it's going to be like an in-park Texas switch. Which all you movie heads out there is when they switch out a stunt person with a main actor in a single shot.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've said that once the Spider-Man flies through the air and he lands in this building, Peter Parker will come walking out and be like, hey guys. And I just want to see that executed in person.
Absolutely. Also part of Avengers Campus is a couple chances to interact or train, quote unquote, with superheroes, including Black Panther and also Doctor Strange, who will be teaching the mystic arts. And there is the major restaurant is themed after Ant-Man and the Wasp. So you're going to have small foods blown up giant and giant foods made very small, and of course a micro brewery, right? Because that's a pun.
And I think I remember seeing in concept art that there's like a conveyor belt of foods being regular sized and then made big or made tiny. Very excited to see that.
More importantly, there is a cart that will sell shawarma.
Yes.
Because you can't save the world without eating shawarma afterwards.
No, you can't. And also a part of this presentation was something that there is no video of. There are no photos of it. Two things. But I saw both of them with my own eyes, and I think I might have gaslighted myself. I'm not sure what it was. So after the exciting announcement for Avengers Campus opening date, Josh D'Amaro was walking through Galaxy's Edge at Disneyland and was basically closing things out, saying, like, we're working on so many new things. Disney Genie is coming to Walt Disney World soon, whenever that is. And then you'll never know what we're working on next. And he stops in front of the blue X-Wing and pulls out a lightsaber hilt. And then he pushes the activator button, and the beam comes out of the hilt straight up, just like the movies.
Was it blue?
It was blue.
Was it glowing?
Yes.
Must be magic.
Must be magic.
Or and then the Force.
He was just like, it's real. And then that was it.
Okay.
And then after that, they also showed and what I assume was an autonomous Groot animatronic the size of a toddler who could walk around and wave by himself.
Wow.
And, yeah.
So I don't know about the Groot, though they've had Boston Dynamics has been working on walking autonomous robots. There was Osmo, the Honda robot at Disneyland. So it's perfectly conceivable that they've, you know, can have shrunk down the technology enough to make a walking Groot. That's pretty cool if he was totally untethered and not like on a platform or anything.
He had
like
wires, but he was walking on like a flat floor inside of what I assume was just like a test room at Imagineering. No one had a remote control operating him.
So let's talk about the lightsaber. I was not on the call. I may or may not have seen an image of it. I will not confirm or deny. I think a lot of people first said, well, it's augmented reality. It's CGI. It was not. It was real. It was practical. And we know exactly how it was done. Or we have a really good idea of how it was done because Disney has filed a patent for this several years ago, actually.
2017.
It's really clever, and it's kind of hard to wrap your brain around it works until you realize that you have one of these in your own house right now. It's called a tape measure.
Oh my god.
All right, think about this.
Okay.
Think about this. You have a tape measure, and it's a little thing that can hold in the palm of your hand, but when you extend it, it comes out as a long straight stick that's got a curve to it, right? A tape measure isn't totally flat. It's got kind of a bend to it. And then you can roll it back up. So this works exactly the same way. It's basically two tape measures. They call it a hemicylinder or a semicylinder, which is basically a half of a tube that, when it's extended out, it's stiff, but it's made of a metal or plastic material that's flexible enough that you can roll it and curl it up tight. And so a tape measure works on a spring, but this would have a little motor. So you've basically got two of these that push out alongside one. They're each curved separately, so they kind of come together, and they're pushed out. And the clever part is, so that gives you the two sides of it. What do you do for the end of the lightsaber? Well, the end of the lightsaber is a little cap. It's a little half of a ball, you know, half of a ping pong ball, that when the lightsaber is retracted, it hides in the very top of the hilt. It's, you know, goes to just below the surface of the hilt. And it's got a little strip of LEDs. And this is a flexible strip of LED. You can go to an IKEA or any electronics shop and get like a thin basically a wire or a string that is little glowing LED lights. They're extremely cheap and flexible and lightweight and easy to power. And that also can just kind of come up on a spiral, on a spindle. So you've got the two halves and a little LED strip in the middle. And when the motors go, it stretches it all out. it all comes out of the hilt, and as long as it all stays there in the right position, it looks like a perfectly solid tube. The only problem is you could not use this lightsaber as a lightsaber, because it's just like a tape measure. When you extend your tape measure out, as long as you're holding it gently, it'll stay stiff. But as soon as you start waving that thing around, it'll fold in half. So if you took this lightsaber and you tried to fight with another lightsaber, it would instantly fold along the curve. But as long as you're just taking it out and posing with it, it'll look great. So this is something that you could use for a meet and greet or a stage show where someone is just like holding out a lightsaber, extending it and putting it away. But I don't think, unless they have some amazing kind of polymer, I don't think you would ever actually be able to do combat with a lightsaber like this.
Yeah.
It's still pretty darn cool, though.
It is still pretty darn cool. And Scott Trowbridge took to Twitter after this dropped, because the internet, at least Twitter, kind of exploded because we were all so surprised by it.
Carly's reaction on
Carly
Twitter.
Wiesel, her reaction,
her mind, her brain just melted.
Her reaction was all of us, I think. Scott Trowbridge said that it is real and it's kind of a ways off. And Disney, they file patents for things all the time, and they are constantly with the Stuntronics. We saw a video of them testing it a couple of years before the Spider-Man version of it appeared. And I think the consensus, at least among people who have discussed it online, is that these lightsabers could be used in some form with Galactic Star Cruiser, because it will have a training remote experience. Not sure how it'll work. As you said, if it's like a tape measure and you wave that thing around, it'll bend.
I think this is definitely something that could be used by an actor in an intimate show. I wouldn't necessarily hand one of these over to a guest, because the first thing a guest is going to want to do is say, what does it feel like? Can I put my finger in the beam? Does it? What happens if I hit the wall with it? I think it would, especially a kid, I think it would be really hard. There's going to be a lot of really sensitive mechanics in this thing, and these things will have to stay in perfect alignment in order to retract cleanly. This is something like you hand it to the actor, they do a little bit, and then like, all right, kid, here, you're training, here's your toy sword. But yeah, this is definitely, this is the kind of thing that is going to get people to pay a lot of money for the Galactic Star Cruiser experience. If this is the only way you can see a real lightsaber is by, you know, spending a couple $1,000s a night for your Galactic Star Cruiser vacation, that might be what pushes people over the edge.
Yeah, I'm also not totally convinced that you'll be able to own one of these. It seems very expensive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, this is not. Yeah. I don't think this is something. I mean, everything eventually, you know, I never would have thought when I was riding the Aladdin flying carpet VR thing 30 years ago that I would now have an Oculus Quest in my house. So anything that is sufficiently advanced eventually makes its way down to consumer. But you're not going to be buying one of these for Christmas next year.
Yeah.
Not going to be buying one of these at Doc Ondar in the next few months. No.
Now, what about buying a baby Groot that's the size of a toddler?
You actually don't buy him. You adopt him. He becomes a member of your family. And you actually have to, because he could live for thousands of years because he's a tree. So you have to assign someone in your will who's going to take care of him when you're gone. It's really complicated. It's worse than owning a parrot.
And then you have to deal with him, teen Groot.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
The smells. Okay. The smells alone.
Ugh. And this, gross. No. We're not doing that.
That was the main. There can't possibly be anything else.
There is, and I have a surprise for you.
Oh my! What?
Bringing you your top news story of the week, whether from your backyard or from around the world. It's time for the main attraction.
We got the video.
So exciting. Oh my God. Wow.
Yes. Surprise.
We feel professional.
I have it. I also have a short version that once I listen back to this tomorrow when I edit the audio, if it feels too long, we'll go.
It might be just a second or two soon.
We have a shortened version too, but yay!
I love it.
Video! For this week's main attraction, it was really hard to choose between all of those things because they were all super important and big ticket news items. But this, I feel like, tops all of them because it's park history, it's big controversial change, and it caused a lot of drama in the community. So Trader Sam is gone.
He is. Walt Disney World's version of the attraction, yes, the Jungle Cruise, is currently operating. And they've not shut the ride down, but they've been going around and starting work on different scenes throughout the ride. And the first scene is the ending of the ride, which is Trader Sam. You know, I got to say right now, I cannot be too upset because Trader Sam never belonged in the Walt Disney World Jungle Cruise. Trader Sam never was in the Walt Disney World Jungle Cruise. His name was Chief Name. He actually never had a name originally, apparently, and then they had a contest among Disney employees to name him, and someone just said Chief Name, as in Name. So, and I don't know at what point people started deciding that the Orlando one should be also called Trader Sam. I don't know that script update came in the 90s or something. I don't know. But the bottom line is that this has not been a culturally accurate or appropriate depiction of anyone for a very long time. And the jokes that went with him, they were traditional, which means old, which means dated. And this gives the Imagineers a opportunity to do something that is new and creative and hopefully funnier, that is not punching down or making people feel uncomfortable, which I personally think is a good thing. We don't know exactly what's happening in Disneyland because that park is closed right now, and the Jungle Cruise will not be one of the rides reopening when Disneyland reopens at the end of April. That was on the list of one of the rides that will not be part of the initial reopening. So, you know, that'll be hidden from view for a little while, but at least in Orlando, you know, I'm not gonna cry a lot for Trader Sam. The important thing is that Trader Sam's legacy is the bars in Disneyland and at the Polynesian, and those are not going anywhere. There's not, they've repeatedly said no changes are planned right now for those, and that's what's important to me personally.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. When this happened, it was without notice. People rode the ride one day last week and were like, oh, Sam's gone. And it made me think back to when they first announced more details about the characters that they're adding to the attraction. Mm-hmm. And that's specifically the drawing of Alberta Falls.
Mm-hmm. It would be a perfect place to put it.
I can't help but think about it.
Here's the thing. Sam, the Trader Sam that we had there, was not a good animatronic in any way, shape, or form. He was very stiff. If they can replace that with a new high-quality animatronic, that would be a good finale for the ride.
Yeah.
So I am all for that being upgraded.
And then I suppose we will have to hold out and wait for Disneyland at least to do whatever they're doing.
You know, it's very likely that whatever change they make in one place will be duplicated. Just, you know, in terms of budget, you want to, you know, spread your effort, you know, your resources. So I'd expect that the same animatronic or whatever goes into that finale will be duplicated in California. Honestly, the figure in California, that that's needed to go for a really long time. And it's kind of crazy that it made it this far without without it. You know, it can go to the archives. It can go to a warehouse. It's next to the Lost Ark of the Covenant. but it doesn't need to be seen by millions of theme park guests, you know, every year. It doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed for an Alberta Falls, because I think that would be
awesome. I think that would be great. Yeah, we know we're getting lots of monkeys. We know that pretty much there's going to be monkeys here, monkeys there, monkeys everywhere.
Trader Sam is now, it's going to be just a chimpanzee trying to sell you bananas.
Right.
I can't wait to see what happens next.
Oh, you know, Drew had a good point in the comments, which is that they haven't said anything about our temple. And to me, that is the thing that's really lacking. You know, it could be really spectacular if they brought the projection mapping that they have in the Tokyo version here. That could, because right now the temple is like, it's sort of a big buildup and then nothing really happens. Some cool projections in there could really liven that up.
And the fog, or maybe that's Hong Kong that has the intense fog.
That's Hong Kong. As the fire and the steam in there.
I want that too, though.
Yeah. Bring that. I want it all.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
Here to Florida.
And I also wish, I love the piranhas that they have in California. I know it's a tiny little effect. It's pretty simple, but I just love them, especially because it means that during the Jingle Cruise, they can make the piranica joke.
Piranica.
It's the Festival of Bites.
Oh, my goodness. Well, before we go, this is the portion where I would share any listener thank yous for those of you who have joined Club or VIP as part of the Attractions Magazine subscription, but we don't have any this week.
Nope. Okay, well, you guys got to get out there and tell your friends and annoy people. Tell your enemies. Like, if you don't like them, you everyone, just proselytize until you get people to join, please.
Yes, please. It's a 4-tier subscription service. You can pick the one that feels right for you. But if you choose Club or VIP, not that we're biased, you get a shout out the week after you subscribe on the Attractions Podcast.
We would be shouting out to you right now, but you didn't sign up.
Now we're sad.
We are sad.
And now this is...
You think about that next time, mister.
Yeah.
As Ellen...
And now this is your part.
This is my bit?
Yes.
See, I should have jumped in a little quicker. I thought we were going to talk about digital subscriber options, but I guess we sort of did. So this is when I remind you that you get to go right now, as soon as you are done listening to this. Or if you have two devices, take advice while you're listening to this. Go to Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars.
Please.
If you don't think we deserve 5 stars, then don't leave a review. Just email me and we can discuss it personally. But otherwise, leave us 5 stars and a review. Tell people how wonderful we are. It will help us share the gospel, the good about Attractions Magazine with everyone else. And in the meantime, you can find me on the interwebs on Twitter and Instagram at S. Kuberski or at the UG Series. And you can pick up a copy of my new book, The Unofficial Guide to Universal Orlando 2021, at theunofficialguides.com. And Brittany, where can they find you?
They can find me at Brittany Tuttle. That's BRITTANITUTTLE. Yes, it's spelled funny. On Twitter and Instagram, but also every day at attractionsmagazine.com, at attractions on Twitter, at attractionsmagazine on Instagram, and youtube.com/attractionsmagazine, where you're watching this if you're here for the live show.
Hello.
And if you were around on Twitter last week for that little event, you saw me go full caps on the Attractions Twitter, which I thought was funny. And until next week, I hope you guys stay safe, wear your mask, get vaccinated if you can, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.